So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's Friday. That's great news for most of us. Friday it is. You know, it's a reminder, though, at the same time. Sometimes we celebrate Friday a little too much, and I think there's a reason for that. It's because sometimes we get confused, and we think that we're living for the sake of work rather than working so that we can live. We forget to live during the week sometimes, taking advantage of those moments throughout the day, in the morning and evening, to truly live and not just turn our life and attitude and approach into drudgery. Coming up today on the show, we'll actually be talking about work, why we should return to work and not just collect unemployment, what work is for women, and is there pressure on women to work, and what's the church's response to that. We'll also pray with and for the intercession of St. Rita of Cassia. She is an incredible intercessor from Italy. We're going to be praying a novena beginning today for 9 days leading up to her feast day on the 22nd. Why? For anyone who's searching for a spouse, for anyone in a difficult marriage, and also for those who are wishing to conceive a baby. So, if you join me, we're going to be praying later on during the show. We'll start that novena and we'll post information about it online in the show notes at relevantradio.com/trending, where you can subscribe to the podcast and get connected. We're also going to play a game of getting to know you. A lot of you have had questions, want to know a little bit more about me, my life, what's happening. Things such as, why haven't I shared my baby's name publicly on air? What did I study? Fun things like that. So if you have a question, the number's 1-888-914-9149. I'd love to join you on your Friday drive, jog, or wherever you are when you're listening to this on podcast. So here's something that not a lot of people discuss. And it's the fact that 85% of women health specialists, medical health specialists, do not perform abortions. The vast majority of OBGYNs, nearly 9 out of 10 of them, don't perform abortions and by choice. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're pro-life, but they have chosen not to perform abortion. Why? Because abortion isn't healthcare. And Dr. Christina Francis was recently interviewed by the Daily Signal, and she was talking about this. She's an OBGYN, and she talked about how it used to be ACOG is American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Now, from their inception, they stood by the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. But also in the Hippocratic Oath, you would not perform an abortion or even recommend an abortion. This was ACOG's original stance. Then, in the 60s, due to social pressure and changing social attitudes about abortion, or pressure to change attitudes about abortion, and good talking points, suddenly ACOG, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, changed their tune. And as the years went by, they took pro-lifers from being a special interest group under ACOG to pro-lifers being pushed out of ACOG. Why? Because ACOG has been there representing and helping to create language for many legal cases and laws surrounding pro-abortion stance. But here's the reality. Why is it that 85%, nearly 9 out of 10 OBGYNs, do not perform abortions? Well, it's because it's not women's health care, which is why women's specialists don't perform in it. It's not life-saving health care either. That's a reason as to why most abortion clinics have a hard time staffing their abortion clinics with an abortionist. Do you know that? Because not very many people want to be abortionists. It's not life-saving work. It's not necessary work. And it's not medical care. Now, one thing that Dr. Christina Francis, an OBGYN, pointed out is that it used to be the approach was that by ACOG, prior to pushing forward a pro-abortion agenda for OBGYNs, they would emphasize delivery or what used to be referred to as quote-unquote therapeutic abortion. That is, if a woman was legitimately in a life-threatening situation, it wasn't even an abortion. It was an early delivery of the baby. An early delivery of the baby, whether it was pre- or post-viability, meaning that that baby might not live and probably won't live if it was pre-viability, and could possibly have a fighting chance post-viability. But you have this equal attitude of you give the best possible care to both mother and baby. It's a pro-woman and a pro-baby approach because it respects the life of the baby and it respects the mom's motherhood. It's important that we recognize the difference between an intentional going in and killing of a baby to remove it from a mom's baby body from an intentional going in and removing a baby, perhaps in a life-threatening situation where the baby had to be removed. Why? Perhaps for a very serious medical reason. And so I bring all of this up because so often people will say, well, I don't know what to say when someone says, well, what about the life of the mother? What if my wife is about to die? What if I know this woman who won't make through the full pregnancy? Well, first of all, did she get a second and third opinion? And second, we don't believe in abortion for any reason whatsoever. For life-threatening reasons, perhaps an early delivery, but not an intentional killing of a baby. If a baby doesn't make it through an early delivery, that was not the intention to kill a child. But if a child can survive an early delivery, praise God, fantastic. Both the baby and the mom's life was able to be saved. And so this is important for us to continue to share this information with others. And if you know anyone, or if you yourself are a medical professional, especially an OBGYN, check out AAPLOG, APLOG, which is, APLOG is also known as a pro-life OBGYN network. So you can check out AAPLOG.org. We'll post notes to that in social media as well. This is Timory. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's great to be with you here on the show. We're going to be praying to St. Rita of Cassia, a novena to her. We'll also be playing a game of getting to know you. So if you have a question today during the show, you can give me a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. We all know that there's a crisis right now surrounding gas and the gas pipeline. Some people haven't been able to have access to any gas whatsoever. And I saw this meme, and I don't often, so we're doing some getting to know you later on. I'll share a little thing. I often don't get memes. I really just don't get them a lot of the time. But I got this one. It said, if you're still collecting unemployment, please avoid getting gas so the rest of us can get to our jobs. Ouch. Let me tell you a little story. A couple weeks ago, I was trying to go to a restaurant that I love, and we went during normal business hours. We pull up, me, my sisters, my mom, really excited. It's our kind of early Mother's Day event that we're going for, and the restaurant's closed. It's never closed at that time. Weird, they've changed their hours. Okay, great. Really love this restaurant, so I wanted to go while I was in town. So day later, we try to go again, but this time we decide we're going to order out, we'll order online, you know, go pick it up. So I called to place an order, says they're not taking online orders. Then I go online, and they say they're not taking phone or online orders. Okay, fine. Long story short, finally I walk in, we go in person, and I end up talking to the owner. We're talking about what's happening at his restaurant during COVID and everything that's happened. He said, we love to be open more. He said, we're doing great. We have a ton of business. He said, we don't have to be open, but we'd like to be more in longer hours than we have. But the problem is that no one's willing to work. We're short-staffed. We keep putting notices out to hire people, and we keep hearing news about unemployment, but no one's asking for an interview. And this is a great restaurant, a great company culture. He said, we haven't fired any staff. We have, if anything, a tired staff, which is why we've had to reduce our hours. We can't get people to work, and those who are working are tired. We're short-staffed on every single shift, so we've had to decrease the number of hours we're open. We've had to stop taking phone orders. We've had to stop taking online orders because we want to best be able to serve the people who are in our restaurant. Why is this happening? another story. A friend of mine runs a dental office, and during COVID, when everything was happening and things were shut down and reopening, as he was trying to reopen his business, a bunch of his employees didn't want to come back to work, and they didn't. Guess why? Because they could collect unemployment, and they didn't want to. We have a very high number of people who are choosing not to work when they do have work available to them by choice. This is unacceptable for us as Catholics. And here's what we need to talk about, because this is scriptural. It's unacceptable for us as Catholics to not to receive money, but to not make an effort for it. To not be pursuing work or be refusing to work. In fact, St. Paul, in his letter to the Thessalonians, one of the great things that he defends in his first letter is that he and some of the other disciples have not just been relying on the religious communities they're serving, that they themselves are doing the work they can to make sure that they themselves have their mouths fed. In fact, then St. Paul goes on to say, if any one of you will not work, let him not eat. For we hear that some of you are living in idleness, more busybodies, not doing any work. And he says, now such persons we command and exhort in the Lord Jesus Christ to do their work in quietness and to earn their own living. St. Paul called people out and said, you shouldn't eat if you're not working. You shouldn't eat if you're not being idle, busybodies, not doing anything, just sitting around. And he calls upon the name of Jesus to tell people, do your work and do it quietly, humbly, reverently, and earn your living. So what can we take from this? I think there's a lot we can ponder here. And we're going to talk about moms and women working in just a few minutes and what the church has to say about that, because I think there's a lot to be said here. But I think the first thing we can take from what St. Paul said in his first letter to the Thessalonians, chapter 3, that we shouldn't take advantage of even governmental systems that can help us, such as unemployment. Sure, we pay into these systems, which is great, but we shouldn't take advantage of them. That's very important. Now, people who, for just reasons, are collecting unemployment because they need it, so be it. It's good. That's why the program's there. But there's a problem when we're seen as a culture of people who are refusing to go back to work. And we're going to unravel this more and talk about some of the work ethic. And we'll also post a link in the show notes to today's show. You can find them at relevantradio.com/trending, where we talked about the dignity and value of the worker leading up to the feast day of St. Joseph the Worker at the beginning of the month this year. So again, that first thing I wanted to emphasize, that we shouldn't take advantage of the system of unemployment. The second thing that I think is important is that we don't take advantage of our employers, even if we are working. With this new world of working from home, here's the attitude we must have. Get our job done and be honest about it. Simple. Let's not overemphasize and get crazy about finding that crisis of work-life balance, the challenge of having kids done. Get your work done and be honest. This is what we're called to as Christians, to put in a good day's work. And on that note, what is work? We can't reduce work to the job that we get paid to do. Work is also the things we do to take care of our homes, our families. Helping do the dishes, pitching in with laundry, helping take care of a crying child, cleaning up the yard, doing some gardening to make sure things look respectable and tidy. Work isn't just the job we go to. So it's important to remember that as well when we talk about work. Just running the home itself is work. So be careful not to just reduce work to a quote-unquote job we go to or do from home, whatever that might be. The other thing I want to emphasize is that COVID has taught us all something with this world of working from home more. A lot of people are discovering they love a better work-life balance, that they actually want a greater work-life balance. This is a good thing. Fight for it. Don't become lazy. Don't take advantage. Be honest. Remember this, that we're meant to work to live. That way we can enjoy what we have, enjoy our family and our friends, participate and cultivate worship, take up our hobbies with right balance, read a great book, but don't live to work. This is, I think, a great reminder that COVID can teach each and every single one of us. And it's an important reminder that each of us ponder. But then there's something that I want to dive a little deeper into, and we will in just a little bit. And that is, there was a tweet that was sent out this past weekend that was all in an uproar. And it pushed the idea of getting mothers back to work after the last year of COVID. I'm going to come back in just a little bit, and we're going to talk about this. Because what does the church have to say about women working? What's the greatest responsibility as moms? I'm also playing a game of getting to know you. You can give us a call if you have a question for me. The number is 1-888-914-9149. I'll be right back. In the meantime, head over to relevantradio.com/trending to connect or ask your question. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back. Happy Friday here on Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you wherever you are, running, jogging, commuting home from work. Who takes a bike to work? I'd love to know that. You know, you have those signs, at least in Southern California, like take your bike to work. You know, don't contribute to the mass amount of pollution we have in the world. How far? Let's see. I'd be curious. Let me know. What's the furthest? If you take your bike to work every day, let me know. Anyways, I digress. We've been talking about work here on the show, the crisis of work happening in our nation. I was laughing at the meme because it's so true, especially with the whole pipeline and gas issue, crisis of gas, where it said, if you're still collecting unemployment, please avoid getting gas so the rest of us can get to our jobs. It was specifically referring to people who are choosing not to work when there are jobs available. And I shared some stories about that, but I want to pivot here for a minute. And I want to talk about moms returning to work. There was a lot of backlash because a tweet went out from the GOP about Mother's Day, around Mother's Day, talking about, quote, getting mothers back to work in light of the last year that we've faced. Many moms have chosen to stay home. Some are choosing modified schedules, allowing themselves to work from home more than they ever have. I've talked to many women who, I quote, on multiple occasions have said this. I could never be a stay-at-home mom. I could never homeschool. It's just not my thing. I don't have the gifts for it. And I've heard so many litanies of reasons for so many moms who say, I can't do it. It's impossible. But I've seen the incredible thing done this year. Moms, you're making it happen. Women who said, I could never be a stay-at-home mom. Women who said, I could never homeschool. You're doing it. Is it easy? No. Are you having to adapt and change your life schedules more than ever before? Yes. But I think it's fascinating to think about all of this from a Catholic perspective. Because there was a lot of backlash against some of the tweets about, quote, getting mothers back to work for just reasons. Because moms are an incredible gift and are incredibly necessary for their kids. And I'm going to share with you why that's so important. There was a letter that came out, an apostolic exhortation titled Complete My Joy by Bishop Olmsted of Phoenix to husbands and wives, mothers and fathers. An incredible apostolic exhortation. If you haven't read it, this is worth the read. And I'm going to post a link now on social media, and I'll post it in the show notes today. You can find them at relevantradio.com/trending in the podcast, because this is an incredibly rich apostolic letter. Let me go, though, to the section where it specifically talks about how important moms are. Bishop Olmsted said, "Mothers and fathers, you are called to have great hearts here, to be countercultural and to be brave." He says this not long before talking about and challenging husbands and wives. He says, "You can build something better, freer, more generous, nobler, beginning in your home." He says this in relation to the great crisis we have in the world. So many of us look around and we can be disheartened by all that's happening. But we can also look around and say, "I can do something about this. And I can do something about it by being not just a good Catholic, by being a good parent, by being a good spouse, by choosing virtue, by fighting to be united to Christ and his church through the sacraments of reconciliation, the sacrament of the Eucharist, be united with him." And Bishop Olmsted emphasizes how the family has a nature, a specific nature, a function of how it interacts with itself, each member of the family, and with the world. And he compares this, for example, to both a rhinoceros and a rose bush. If a rhinoceros and a rose bush have a purpose, have a function, so too, and all the more so, a human family. Because the human person isn't just good, it's very good. God emphasized the human person as a pinnacle of creation, and actually even more so, women. He went on to emphasize in this apostolic exhortation, women, the worth, the dignity, and the ingenious and inherent to them, and how women, specifically mothers, are irreplaceable in your families. He says, "Only you can offer husbands the respect St. Paul speaks of, which husbands need." He also says, "Only you can offer the motherly love your children need." He goes on to say that the mother alone has the power to truly comfort and stabilize a child, especially during the first years of a child's life. Listen to that. Comfort and stabilize. This is so important for children, and we see more and more research emphasizing that kids need their moms all throughout their upbringing. But there's a great book titled, and if you're questioning this, check it out. It's titled Being There, Why Prioritizing Motherhood in the First 3 Years Matters. There's also another incredible book called Love and Economics by Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, and it emphasizes and touches on some of the psychology and development of children, and it shows how important it is that moms are present in the upbringing of their children, and how a mom needs to be 100% able to focus on that baby, and that the father's supposed to be there to support the mother and the child, and this is what the church upholds. But it's continued to uphold. Now, hold on, because I know there are some people who are frustrated, especially working moms. It puts a real big challenge for each of us when it comes to making ends meet, when it comes to whether or not we feel equipped to embark on the mission of motherhood, which, remember, is a God-given mission. Remember, the sacrament of marriage gives us the graces necessary to live out our marital vows. And remember, part of our marital vows orients us, calls us to children. It's one of the first commandments that God gives to Adam and Eve. Be fruitful and multiply. Fruitfulness isn't just having children, but also having those children bear fruit to be good and flourishing human beings in society. So here's the deal. Here's the kicker. And this is the challenge that each and every single one of us are called to. In this, Complete My Joy, Archbishop Olmsted says, "I here have a challenge for you and your husbands." He says this to wives and husbands. Number one, he says, "Be at home while your children are young." And number two, put other work off during this time of necessary imbalance when your children need most to absorb your motherly presence and the unconditional love you more naturally provide. Those are some intense words and guidelines that Archbishop Olmsted is giving in this apostolic exhortation, and I remind myself often to read and ponder them. I'll share with you a little story. So when I was growing up, I remember always thinking, okay, I really want to be a mom. And not everyone's excited to be a mom, but I remember thinking in high school, there's one conversation that people don't really have with women. It's a conversation having to do with college and having to do with work and student loans regarding whether or not you'll be in a chosen field, in a chosen type of education, and an income level, or even a type of student loans that you obtain that will allow you the freedom to give to your children, allow you the freedom to be present as the church calls us to. And it's a great question that I don't think we're talking enough about for the next generations. I'll tell you, over the last 10 years, I've had some pretty incredible job opportunities. And every time I've had an opportunity, I've pondered, because I wanted to have children, I wanted to start a family. Is this a trajectory, if I start to walk down it, that will prevent me or distract me from being able to be a parent one day? And that doesn't mean, you know, at the time I didn't have children, that you should say no to things. But I think that I really recognized, and I've been guided in many directions by this, by great, great parents who have gone before me, by great religious priests and by the church, that we need to keep in mind family. This is real family planning. In fact, when I first joined here at Relevant Radio and we were talking about the show, I was asked multiple times, would you be interested in doing a show for 2 hours a day? And I kept saying, no. Like, one of my reasons is I said, I think I could say what I have to say in one hour, not in two. You can always hear more tomorrow. And grant, there's always much more to be said. But the second reason for that is because I wanted to have a family. And I didn't want to go in a trajectory that would make me so busy and so consumed that it wouldn't be possible. I wanted to be able to participate and volunteer and be involved in a mission. And praise God, He's given my family a great means and provisions through working here with you and getting to talk to you every day on Trending at Relevant Radio. But I had to be reminded to be humble and to change my approach of what types of means I would need, what type of lifestyle I'd choose. And I talked to a friend of mine, and she talked about how when she was growing up, her mom had one nice dress. They lived, you know, a very nice life. They didn't really want for anything per se growing up. The mom was always home. But she remembers that her mom really only had one nice dress, and she wore it every single Sunday. And she said that one nice dress represented that my parents had made a choice. My parents had made a choice to make my mom as available as possible for us kids growing up. She said it wasn't easy. It required a very different approach than we're used to in the Western world today. I look at my own closet and goodness gracious, the clothes we wear, the quantity of clothing we have, we're not necessarily making sacrifices in terms of the types of lives we're living. We think and we create this mindset and this environment to have to need so much. And I think that this is where we can take the challenge from Archbishop Olmsted when he says to husbands and wives that the mom needs to be home with their children while they're young, and that we as women, as mothers, are to put work off during this time of necessary imbalance when your children need you most to absorb your motherly presence and the unconditional love that only you moms can naturally provide for your kids. This isn't meant to be a guilt trip. This is meant to point to the great gift of mothers. As Bishop Olmsted said, the worthy dignity and genius inherent in you as a mom is irreplaceable in your family. Only you can offer the motherly love that your children need. And the mother alone, as he says, alone has the power to truly comfort and stabilize a child, especially during the first years of a child's life. The case for this is strong. The research is true. And I've shared with you guys a little bit the challenge because many of us are working. And there's something important we have to remember when we think about work and motherhood and so forth. Women and mothers have always worked. But the type of lifestyles we live today are radically different from a lifestyle lived 100 years ago or even 500 years ago. We were more connected to the land. We had not just mothers, but fathers very close often to the home and the land as well. In fact, the children had greater interaction with their parents because they too were participating and pitching in what was happening day to day to keep the family home operating. So it poses a challenge for us to recall that work isn't bad for moms. It's a matter of making sure that the number one priority is children. Making sure the number one priority is meeting the bodily needs, the needs of the soul, the needs of the mind, and the needs of the heart for children. For us as women, as moms, that means our work is going to look radically different from what the dads in the households look like. And I think that this is what we have to look at when we talk about a Catholic future of families, that we're willing to make the sacrifices to the great call and challenge that the church offers us. It's interesting, I was written the other day by one of you, and I really was fascinated by the comment. Kelly's a mom of three, and she said, "I'm feeling called to do something." And as she was saying that, you know, she said she's a mom of three, she's taking care of her kids, and I often hear this from a lot of moms, and I think this is incredible, this heart to give. And I think the first thing that we have to remember as moms is, being a mom is the greatest thing you can do. You're literally shaping souls that will change the world. And so there's this challenge to dive deep, to set an example. And rather than being an influencer on social media or in our job, to be the influencer in the lives of our kids and their peers. And kids need parents to fight to protect to them. We're at a point where I see from California to New York, rampant sexual activity that is truly destroying the innocence of children. You want to do more as a mom? Get involved if your kids are in public school or private school, in the school boards, in the school program. Know what's happening. Know what your kids are learning. You want to make a change? You want to make a difference? Invite those kids who don't have their parents around into your home and be a parent and a guide and a mentor for those children. There's so much we could talk about quote-unquote doing more. But sometimes I think the challenge is that we turn around and look out in the world of what can I do out there when we're missing what can I do right here. Mother Teresa, Saint Mother Teresa, is well known for a quote in people where she said, "Go home and love your families." And some people thought that was somewhat patronizing. And the reality is that she was emphasizing that moms, parents, the greatest thing you can do is to love your family, be with them, be present, guide them in their upbringing. And so I think that the case for moms being home more, the case for moms being more present to their kids is very strong, and we have to take it a little more seriously. Being willing to make the sacrifices for the type of car or quantity of cars we have, the type of house, type of things that we buy. Remember the story I shared of how my friend's mom had one nice dress that she wore to Sunday Mass each day. You know, I think that we've become so materialistic that we truly believe living a simpler life is impossible. And again, I said this, I look in my own closet and I have a heck of a lot more than one nice dress that I could wear to church. I could have a much simpler car than I have. We could always have a simpler home. We can always not buy things that we really don't actually need, but that we might want. It's a challenge for us to take up Archbishop Olmsted's challenge and calling for all of us to live that simpler life, to bring moms and dads, but especially moms, to be more present to their children. And I challenge you, go and read the beautiful exhortation, Complete My Joy, by Archbishop Olmsted, the Diocese of Phoenix, and just Bishop Olmsted, not Archbishop. Check it out. We post it on social media, and you can find it as well in the show notes for today's podcast. I'll be back in just a little bit. We're playing a game of getting to know you, and we're also kicking off today praying a novena to St. Rita leading up to her feast day for anyone who is wanting to get married, meet someone, is having difficulties in their marriage, or wants to have a baby. We'll be right back here on Trending.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, we're playing a game. We're playing it now, and this is the game that we are playing.
Getting to know you, getting to know all about you. Getting to like you, getting to hope you like me.
I didn't know that Julie Andrews sang this song in The King and I. You know what's funny? I didn't even realize that was her. I just realized. It's so funny. I've been singing the Sound of Music soundtrack, dancing around the house with my baby. And all of a sudden I heard, I'm like, whoa. I never put two and two together. Anyways, it's been a long time since I watched that movie. Wait, that's not her, Patrick? I don't think that version was. Deborah Kerr? I think I was listening to Julie Andrews' version then. Earlier. Okay, this is crazy. Deborah Kerr. Fascinating. I stand corrected. Okay, we're playing Getting to Know You. I have a ton of questions that have come in, and I'll answer the one that a lot of people have been asking. And by the way, two of my producers, Patrick and Lucas, each have a question. I told them they can ask anything. I don't know what it is. I don't know what they're going to ask me, so get prepared. But one of the first questions I wanted to throw out there, I've been meaning to talk about it. Senorita Lupita asked me this on Instagram. So if you have a question, you can give us a call. Number's 1-888-914-9149. Or you can comment on social media. Just head over to relevantradio.com/trending. I'm taking questions now on Instagram. Why did you choose not to share your daughter's name? She said, sorry if it's personal. Okay, so this is a great question. I could do a whole show on this. But here's the reality. I've chosen to live the life I'm living. My baby's just a baby. She shouldn't have to have her name out there for the world to know. And to be honest, it's really creepy if a complete stranger could walk up to her and say her name and just approach her. And if you really think about it, and we live in a world where there's a lot of creeps out there, and I don't want people to just walk up to her and be like, hey, I know your name, and I almost just shared her name on accident. Hey, Susie, I know your mom, and just start randomly talking to her and create confusion about safety. You know, what if I'm not there and someone's able to convince her and they mean ill? I mean, unfortunately, we live in a world where a lot of people don't like what we talk about here at Relevant Radio and what I talk about. And so I don't want to just throw her name out there as something for everyone to easily access. Now, I love my baby's name. I would love to share it. But that's just kind of why, because there are weird people out there and she does deserve a little bit of privacy, to be quite frank. It's my choice to share things publicly, but it's not hers. And in fact, we're still kind of debating whether or not we'll be sharing photos after the first year, which I know I love the baby photos. We'll see. Stay tuned what we decide to do. Lucas, you are up. What's your question?
What is one of your biggest pet peeves?
Oh, biggest pet peeves. Okay. I think I learned this about myself a couple months ago during Lent. So what I was working on during Lent was detachment. And as I was like just studying detachment and working on it and really trying to be aware of it, I realized I was really attached to my time and that I hate wasting time and I hate it when other people waste my time. Like, it makes me really angry. And I think I've gotten better at that. So yeah, that's my biggest pet peeve, is my time being
wasted. So if you're not being like productive in the moment, it drives you crazy. You just go like, I have to be doing something.
Not so much if I'm not productive in the moment, but like being efficient with my time. Like, don't just, like, talk about random stupid things. I don't want to watch a stupid YouTube video. you know, if you're going to, like, carry something up the stairs and there are, like, five other things that need to go up, like, take it all at once. Like, don't take multiple trips when you can do it all at once. Like, really simple things that I just need to be more patient about.
Okay, that's fair. Cool.
Yeah. Great question. Okay, Patrick's ready. He's gearing up. Okay. I'm scared. What's the question, Patrick?
Okay, I'd love to ask this to couples whenever I'm like at parties or something like that, and especially when they're separated from each other. So he's not, he may be listening right now, but then I'd like to ask him the same question and see if the answers match up. So,
okay.
So don't tell him. It's an honor system. Maybe one of these days I'll tell him and ask him the same question.
Okay. Right. I won't tell him the answer.
Okay. How did you and Gabriel meet?
Oh, how did we meet? That's a great question. My husband Gabriel and I met at college. We both went to John Paul the Great Catholic University. And the very first time we met was actually at a football game for the school. So JP Catholic and Thomas Aquinas College, there in, I think, LA Diocese, were playing against each other. And sad news, our university, JP Catholic, we didn't really have the athletic people. We always lost against TAC. So that's the sad news. And I think that's why he refused to play on the football team, because he knew our football team that played once a year. I'm sorry.
He looks
guys,
like a guy who could play football. He looks like a guy.
He totally could play football. He's played rugby. I mean, he totally could. That's a great question. So that's where we first met. We met at school. We dated during undergrad. We dated during grad school for too many years after. And you know what, Patrick, this is a great question, because there's another question that came in where someone said, just tell us a little bit more about your relationship, dating relationship with your now husband. Dating relationship challenge. I've shared this before. We dated way longer than we ever hoped to. And this question's from Diane on Instagram. You know, part of that is growing up. I think God did have a plan. There were a lot of things that I was involved in terms of ministry work. There was also a lot of challenges from student loans, kind of laziness. He said, you know, I should have asked you to marry me years earlier and I didn't. And although it was, I think, a real challenge for us, my approach was, I'm just going to keep giving what I can. I'm don't need, you know, a great big income. I can volunteer. I can serve. And so I gave as much as I could before getting married. And our dating relationship, we usually saw each other one day during the week in the evenings, and then we'd hang out most of the weekends together, most of the whole weekends. We went to mass together always. We had a lot of fun dating. Sometimes I think we struggled with like doing fun things enough, especially because we were in undergrad and grad school, and I was volunteering a lot. He was running his own company. And so sometimes I don't think we were good enough at just like having fun. And I remember we enjoyed our relationship and grew a lot closer, and we were better at just doing things we enjoyed. And it didn't have to be expensive. We went hiking a lot, you know, going to the beach, having picnics, simple things like that. But yeah, that's a little bit about our dating relationship. If you want to ask a question, we're playing Getting to Know You here on Trending with yours truly. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Most questions are coming in, though, on social media. And this question came, I mentioned part of it earlier, a mom of three, Kelly, said she really wants to do more. She said she has three kids, and she said, why did you study what you studied, and were you planning to do something other than radio when you were studying? I had zero plan of doing radio. Zero plan. Like, this is how big of a joke it is. I don't know if Patrick and Lucas, you guys know this. So when I would be in class in college, grad school, like if we had to read aloud during class, my heart would be beating. I would be like bright red, probably purple. I would be sweating profusely. My voice would be shaking. And I would like, just, dear God, help me get through having to read out loud in class. And I hated it. And yet, I was really involved in one thing, and that was I would speak about abortion. And then I remember I was getting hired for a job one day, and I was working for, it was a crisis pregnancy center, and I was studying, I think at the time I was still a business major, because I wanted to help businesses, nonprofits, be more business savvy in the pro-life movement. I see so much of like a hope and a prayer in terms of what pro-life and Catholic nonprofits do, and we need to be a little more savvy in our marketing, business practices. personal human development. And so I was originally studying business. I changed and became a new evangelization major, studying communications, theology, and philosophy, kind of a nice like combo of the three. But I remember when I was being interviewed for a job for a crisis pregnancy center, I really wanted to get involved. I was willing to do whatever there. And you should know the one thing I always said I wasn't going to talk about or write about was chastity. I was just, no way. Like, I had told God, I will talk about anything having to do with abortion, but not chastity. Not that. Then I'm in this interview for a crisis pregnancy center, and the woman's incredible. She's an incredible family friend and mentor now. And I remember I'm sitting there in the interview, I'm thinking, this is it. You know, this is what I'm going to do while I'm in college. I'll work for this organization. And I went, okay, God, this is it. If they offer it to me, I'll take it. I'll do anything they ask. Next thing I know, right after I say that, the words out of her mouth are, we'd like to hire you, but listen, this is what I want you to do. I want you to head up our chastity education program. I'm going to go in and speak at the high schools, the middle schools, and the churches. We have a lot that ask us to speak and share about abstinence and chastity. And I'm like, God, you've got to be kidding me. I told you there's the one thing I wouldn't do, and I just told you that this is where I was going to go. So when you asked, did I ever plan on doing radio? No. I wanted to be involved in the pro-life movement from the time I was 13. I knew that was like the full-time trajectory I had, but I thought that it was going to be more business savviness. And then the contraception mandate happened like back in 2010. The writing was on the wall. Everything was changing with healthcare. And I remember a letter that now Pope Emeritus Benedict had written, and he was basically talking about how the crisis surrounding the world right now, and this was just days before the contraception mandate came out, isn't just a matter of abortion, isn't just a matter of, you know, all these different topics. It's a matter of a crisis of faith, and we need to be able to appeal to the hearts, minds, and souls of people. And it was like that. I knew I had to study theology. I knew I needed philosophy. I changed my major. I focused on communication. And then out of nowhere, I was doing a, Trent Horn and I from Catholic Answers, we were doing a radio show, guests on a radio show in San Diego, and we're talking about abortion. This was the first time we met, and someone at the Diocese of San Diego looked at us and said, you two should have a radio show. And within a couple months, we had a radio show. We were running the show Hearts and Minds through Catholic Answers in the Diocese of San Diego, and we did that for a couple years together, and things kind of just happened one at a time. Is how I started doing what I do is this. I said yes when there were opportunities to serve. Sometimes I said yes too often and I burnt myself out, but you won't burn yourself out if you're living a sacramental life and you're staying close to the sacraments, if you're staying in a state of grace. Even if you take on perhaps a different trajectory than you should, you won't make a really bad decision. I think that that's really important for us to remember as we're talking about making decisions and what we study. And long story short, what I studied from there ended up being biblical theology, because I saw that I needed a deeper foundation, a closer relationship with God, ongoing, in order to help appeal from a natural perspective to people to take them to Jesus. We have to appeal to the heart, minds, and souls of people, but we need to know where to take them after that. And that's a crisis I saw in the crisis pregnancy centers, is there would be moments where a woman, I remember one woman, she looked at one of the counselors, and she had had multiple abortions, chosen to keep one of her children. She was about 3 years younger than me. I think she was 19. I was about 20, 22-ish. And I was about to start studying my grad school program. And she looked at the counselor, and she had been a mistress to a married man. She had also worked in strip clubs. And she looked at the counselor, and she said, I don't feel anything in intimacy anymore, in physical intimacy. And she said, I don't know what's right from wrong. And she said, how do I get feeling back? How do I know what's right and wrong? And I remember one of the counselors couldn't really answer that question at first. They said, well, you need God. But they weren't ready to give her the next steps and words and guidance to usher her in. And so we need to be able to talk about Jesus. We need to know our faith. We need to be willing and able to not just say you need God, but to be able to talk about God with them. And so once our friends, our loved ones are there, that's where we need to be able to take them. And I think that that's so important for us to do. One more question I've got coming in from Caitlin. What are you reading right now? Okay, I'm probably reading like 10 books, to be honest. And the question, she's like, what are you reading right now? And what are some of your top 5 books you'd recommend for budding Catholics? I'm reading right now, one of them is The Ways of Mental Prayer by Reverend Dom Vitalis Lahoti. It's about 115 years old. I'm also reading Irreversible Damage. I'm not finished that yet. What else am I reading? I'm reading a bunch of academic journals. I'm reading documents on Fatima right now as well. Those are just a couple of the more educational ones. I just finished the 3rd book in the Aragon series. That's more so for fun. Top 5 books. Let's see if I can do this fast. Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love by Ed Suri. Theology and Sanity would probably be number 1 by Sheed. I'm forgetting his first. Frank Sheed. Yeah, you guys got it. Thanks. Patrick and Lucas are on it. What else would I recommend for fun, great books for budding Catholics? Oh, man. Love and Responsibility is a really hard book to read. But start. Take a paragraph at a time. Ponder it. We need to know this stuff today. So there are 3 good ones I'd recommend. Hey, listen, we're praying the Novena to St. Rita. I'm praying with you and for you. I'm going to post links in the show notes and on social media tonight. I'm praying for you if you are searching for a spouse. We're praying together for marital struggles if you are having struggles in your marriage. And I'm also praying for and with you if you're trying to conceive a baby and having a difficult time. So join me in the Novena. We'll be praying it throughout the next 9 days together starting today. We'll post information about that at relevantradio.com/trending in today's show notes. Talk to you Monday.